The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
It's howdy doody time. I just can't get that out of my mind. I have had so many people call and want me to replay that segment from last show. Anyway,
First off, before you go any further, Nick, good morning, Nick. Welcome to Poke at the Hornet's Nest. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing as good as I can with a little tiny bit I got left to work with.
And it's getting smaller every day.
I'm thinking I need counseling.
Well, that probably won't do you very, very much because you're kind of a hopeless case. But now back to the regularly scheduled program you were about to start. I just wanted to introduce where we are, who we are, what the show is. It's Doug Janke and Nick Gardner.
KCNR1460.com. Tune in. Be there or be square.
Well, if they're listening, they're probably already there. Just
so,
saying.
We're going to open up with a clip from the city council meeting this last Tuesday night. Let's go with that first clip. And I'll let you guess who this is.
Been at the mission now for 11 years, 9.5 years as the executive director. In really thinking about this, I pulled some numbers.
What happened there? We're going to go.
Over the past 11 years, the mission has been able to shelter just over 13,000 individual people. That's unduplicated people. Those 13,000 people are not sleeping on the streets of Reading today as a result of what we've done. We also looked at the number of services, individual services we provided, and we provided 92,000 unique services to this population. That's not including meals.
13,000 services.
We've provided just around 2 million meals to this population over the past 11 years. As you can imagine, that takes quite a toll on your properties, especially our main day center that we have where we serve our meals. We're sheltering people. The last time we were able to renovate that was 17 years ago. And so I don't know how many people we've served over the past 17 years. I can only tell you from when I've been the CEO, so over the past 11 years, it's taken quite a toll. We're in desperate need. If we want people to continue coming to the mission, we really need to renovate, get it into the shape it needs to be in to provide better care. So thank you, Council, for considering this. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, well, that was Jonathan Anderson. I hope you guys can hear that clip okay. He's there at the city council meeting. They've decided to give him $500,000 out of a grant from the state of California, $8.4 million, to renovate the wore-out Good News homeless magnet. So here was my reply. I was the next speaker. There was just the two speakers of us. So let's go with my reply to Jonathan.
My feelings if you sent code enforcement down there and shut the Goodwill homeless magnet down. Actually, they're attracting a lot of these people, and I don't think that the taxpayers should be helping fund them myself. I always understood it was a volunteer organization and it was run on people donating things. You know, you keep wanting to house these people, and you keep wanting to hire more people, and you've got your hands out for more money, and it's just one big bureaucracy. I would like to see you hire a couple of detectives.
We're having
to find out where these people came from and take about $1 million of this $8.4 million and buy one-way bus tickets back to where they came from. You know, they just...
We're having technical difficulties. That's as far as I wanted to go on that clip anyway. What I said is if you're going to keep hiring people, why don't you hire a couple of detectives to investigate where these newly out-of-town people came from and spend about $1 million on one-way tickets sending them home. Earlier in the meeting, during public comment, I pointed out that I had talked to five homeless people in the last 5 or 6 weeks. Three of them came here for Bethel.
Oh, wow.
One of them, I got to talking to him. I said, are you local here? He says, oh, yeah, I'm from Reading. I says, where'd you go to high school? He says, well, I went to high school in Martinez down by Hercules. And well, the, the other guy said he's from Medford.
Oh, well, Nick, you know the thing is, hire me. I've already figured it out. I have solved the mystery. Newsom recently spent millions upon millions of dollars to welcome our communist friend Xi to San Francisco, and he rounded up all the homeless people, which he couldn't do for the people of San Francisco. He did it for Xi, and in a nice gesture, he lined the streets with the communist flag. I thought that was touching. I almost cried. But I would be willing to bet that some of those homeless people found their way to Redding, California, thanks to Mr. Gavin Newsomini. That's my take on it.
Well, the way I take it is you're absolutely right, and then he sent us $8.4 million. But there's strings on that $8.4 million.
Of course.
And we're going to get to that. But I wanted to bring to your attention what I had told the city council 2 weeks before. And 2 weeks before that, 3 weeks ago, I was talking to Jason Miller. Jason Miller owns Miller's Deli down there where Subway used to be, right next to the Cypress Street Bridge on the west side.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, okay.
And he told me he was at his old location down by Ace Hardware on 273, and he saw a ghost bus pull up. A ghost bus is a white bus with no, well, I don't know who the heck Jimmy is. We're not supposed to have a call. Hang on a second, Jimmy. We don't take calls, Jimmy. So anyway, where was I? A ghost bus is a white bus with no license plate. And he said 50 to 55 people got off that ghost bus. And he said he walked over and talked to a couple of them. And he said, where are you guys from? They'd just been released from San Quentin.
No kidding.
No kidding. And he said everyone was dressed pretty much the same, and they had a black garbage bag half full, and they just dispersed.
Wow. Well, you know, remember, I don't remember the lady's name, but I'll just say she was a black lady because that's just a statement of fact. That's not a racist comment in today's world. But she actually testified, spoke at the Board of Supervisors about she had to go pick somebody up at night and here in downtown Reading by the fire station, if I remember correctly. And she showed up, and it was a bus in the middle of the night, and people just got off the bus, and they were all from San Francisco.
And they'd been given $50 in directions for services. And I asked Bill Shuler a couple weeks later, and he said he couldn't find her. In fact, I emailed that to Bill Shuler and with the location and the timestamp,
yeah.
And he watched it, and he emailed me back if I knew how to get a hold of her. And he claimed that they couldn't find her.
Well, I mean, it's easy. I think she announced her name on the video when she said, "Hi, I'm such and such." And so she sat there publicly on TV. I mean, it's all recorded, and said she witnessed the same thing, a bus. And she said she talked to something or some of the people or something. I can't remember exactly the words. It's been a couple months. But she said basically they were all coming from San Francisco. They had been
absolutely.
Given a one-way ticket.
That's exactly what she said.
So I totally believe that we have a ghost bus that shows up and drops off 50 people out of it in front of the South Reading.
So, Jimmy, you got something important you must want to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, two quick points. Number one, yes, whoever says the homeless, most of the homeless are from Reading is full of it. Because I went down to two homeless camps about 3 years ago when I guest hosted one of the shows there. About 70% were from out of town and or out of state.
And one was from Mexico.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
You remember that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, and the other thing, another quick comment is about the ghost bus you're talking about. Those white buses with tinted windows. I went to drop somebody off at the airport about 2 months ago, and on the way back I stopped into TA Travel Center, and there was two of those buses sitting in front of the Travel Center, and there was about 20 Latino men about age 18 to 40, standing out front. And I'm like, okay, well, and I go inside, and there's like 60 of these guys in there. Popeye's, all the restaurant chairs were packed. I mean, there must have been 80 guys there. And I'm looking at these buses going, what is this? Well, I drove around the back of the buses, and I kid you not, people, they had Mexican federal license plates and California license plates on each bus.
Wow.
And they are bringing those people, you know, dispersing them through the United States. And if you go up and down I-5, which I have done a lot this year, even down towards Los Angeles, you will see these buses going up and down the highway. And on the way back, they are empty.
Yes.
So, you know, and somebody posted on the chat room, how many of these people from Good News are, you know, migrants or whatever you want to call them.
Thanks for calling and letting us know about that, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Nice
Bye.
To hear from you.
Well,
you
know,
the thing is that what we want? Is that what our community wants? You
well, that's
know
what liberals want. That's what liberals want,
and
yes.
And you want to know who shoved that down our throats?
Liberals.
Kristen Schrader.
Yep, liberal.
Julie Winters.
Liberal.
Leonard Modi.
Liberal.
And everybody that follows in their footsteps.
Yeah, including Aaron Reasoner and who is it? Audette, I think is her name. The reality is this is the liberal playbook. They hate this country, and it goes back to what you were saying on the audio we couldn't really hear is – one thing that has to be said publicly, and I'll be the one that takes the bullet for it, is the more you provide to homeless people, i.e. the rescue mission. Jonathan and the group have done some great stuff. I know people who've actually gone through and succeeded, locals who had
damn few.
But the reality is the more services you offer them, the more we're going to get them. Offering the services.
And besides that, you've got the state bribing us with grants to take more and take more and take more. It's gotten to where I think we should change the name of Reading to Welfare.
Well, you know what also, Nick, I will say this. This is I'm gonna condemn the County Board of Supervisors and the City Council. They're accepting that money. That money is not coming in without those strings, and none of them are speaking up. Not one is out there saying, hey, we're not going to take this money. So from Patrick Jones, Chris Kellstrom, Kevin Cry, the other two losers, and the city council, if this money's coming in and we're having to take homeless people, speak up. Say something. Let us know what's going on, because if Nick hadn't stumbled across the $8 million, we wouldn't have even known about it.
Kevin Cry, I take exception. Kevin Cry has a soft spot for his heart with the homeless. And I do, too. Our homeless. But I don't want to take care of San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, mentally ill, the criminals they send up here. I don't want my tax money going to that. I want my tax money providing safety for my community.
Well, and Nick,
let me get back to Jason Miller.
Please.
I suspect he's going to close his business and move, probably as soon as he can get out of his lease, because I can see on his face he's just disgusted. They've affected his business in such a negative way.
Yep.
And there's the Shasta Pizza Company across the street from the library. I talk to them quite often. Karen, who runs it, best pizza in town as far as I'm concerned, she told me she has people call in and order a pizza and ask if they can bring it out to the curb because they're afraid to get out of their car and walk 15 feet and go in and get their pizza. There's a smoke shop right next door.
Well, I dare anybody who's listening, anybody who's not listening, to come up with one good, positive thing that these homeless people have done for our community. Just one. Just one and say, oh, they have whatever. They have systematic.
They burn off the underbrush.
Well, yeah. they have systematically destroyed our society in terms of what we now consider normal. You drive through town and you see them everywhere like cockroaches. And folks, let me make this clear. I said this way back when I first joined Nick. I think it's been almost 2 years now, for crying out loud. I could have done a robbery and got out sooner. I, as a kid, growing up twice, not once, twice, been homeless. Once for 18 months, I lived in a motorhome with my eight people, family. There's eight of us, and we lived in a 24-foot motorhome, and we moved every day. That was my sixth and seventh grade years. Then when I was a sophomore, we thought that was such a horrendous experience, so we moved into a two-door Cadillac Coupe DeVille for the rest of my sophomore year and all my sophomore summer. I have been homeless. I speak from experience. We didn't have programs. We weren't cool. We were looked down on. People, you know, I wouldn't say spit at us because that would be a bit of a lie, but we were kind of, you know, the pariah of the area. And so we have changed the word for what it is to make it sound. What is it now? Unhoused. Homeless.
Unsheltered.
Unsheltered. It used to be you were a bum, you were a loser, and I can tell you, having been there, I mean, you get up every day sitting in the right seat of a Coupe DeVille Cadillac to go to high school, you learn a couple things, and I have no sympathy for these folks here that are doing this. Now, for veterans who have been sent off to do things that I God forsake, would never want to do. I have a soft spot for veterans, genuine veterans who went off and did stuff. For the rest of it, grab your bootstraps and become an adult. I mean, you can't keep blaming society for how bad life is.
So, getting back to Lucky Miller's sandwich shop, go have a sandwich and talk to Jason himself. I witness the guy that did it.
Yeah.
And Karen down at the Pizza Shasta Pizza Company, go have a pizza and talk to her and how it's affected her business.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's not what we pay our taxes for. They're killing the goose that laid the golden egg that is supporting this country or this city when they won't control people that are affecting their businesses in a negative way when they could control it.
Well, you know, New York is a great example of this, Nick. Let's go a little macro. New York, because they're a sanctuary city, or at least they were until they actually had to be a sanctuary city, they're doing a budget cut next year of all of the services that they actually need, good schools, good police, so they can give it to illegals. Turn that around. Increase the budget to the police. Increase the budget to a good education and stop giving the illegals money except for a plane ticket one way back home.
I read where they were giving turkeys to the illegals and not to the unsheltered.
Oh, I believe that.
Yes. Anyway, let's get to where I went to the meeting and they discussed how they were going to spend this $8.4 million. And $500,000 is going to go to the rescue mission, mm-hmm. Homeless Magnets, so they can come up to code, I suspect.
Yeah.
From the looks of it, it looks like if the termites quit holding hands, the place would fall down.
As a real estate agent, that's kind of funny, Nick. So you got stuff going on there. I see papers all over. I don't want to interrupt your flow. What do you got?
Well, go ahead till I find the right paper.
Oh,
Nick. I know where it is. It's right here.
Oh, see?
Beep. You knew you're dealing with a handicap. Okay.
Welcome to Nickville.
They want to spend $1.6 million for the CERT team. That's the team with the mental health and street outreach. Street outreach is food, Narcan, wipes, gloves, supplies, what they need to go out and talk to these people to keep themselves safe and things that will make them trust them. Here's a candy bar. Can we talk to you? Maybe we can lead you to some services. You know, I think, you know, I've talked to Dale Ball. I've listened to Mark Mazzano. I've talked to other people. And they tell me when they go to these cleanups and people are leaving that maybe, you know, 5% will accept services.
Yeah.
2 out of 100 or something like that. The rest of them just want to disperse and go find someplace, some other bush to live under. And then I brought to the attention to the city council that the new way they're handling homeless cleanups now is the police cleanup crew will clean up public property. But when it comes to private property, they have to go get a warrant, and then they'll clean it up, and they'll find the private property owner and charge him dump fees.
Oh, my God.
So they kick them off public property, move them on private property, find the private property owner. And I said, well, why are you doing that? Well, they'd spend, I think he said, $500,000 on dump fees.
Oh, I believe that, yeah.
Well, the thing is, the county owns the dump. The city runs it. Why do they have to pay anything? I brought that up to their attention, and Mark Mazzano mentioned that when they were talking about dispersing this money. And Barry said, well, you know, Barry's a real sharp pencil character. He said that...
and that's Barry Tippin, folks.
Yes, he said that, we provide dumpsters and toilets and trash cans, and these private people, they can clean it up and they can use our dumpsters to dump it in. Well, you know, that takes work to go out and clean up somebody else's mess.
Yep.
And then 3-4 weeks later, here they are back, and you got to clean it up again. And it's a mess that's being created by the policies of Reading.
Well, I have an idea. It just came to me, Mick. I think I've solved part of the problem. From now on, anybody who's listening has got any kind of authority, try this the next time you guys are going to go to a homeless encampment. Instead of just kicking these people off, circle it, don't let them leave. But they have to clean it up themselves. They have to go pick up the syringes. They have to pick up the poo. They have to figure out. So before they can leave, they actually have to do some community service. I think that might change some of the attitudes if they realize they're the ones that are going to be stuck cleaning their own poo up. So now it is they show up. These people just walk out, and then a paid crew comes in at yours and my expense and cleans it. I'm saying from this point forward, every cleanup that we have to do. We make sure there's no way out, so we circle it up. Nobody leaves until they pick. We provide a dumpster, and we tell them all they have to fill the dumpster. I think that might be something worth considering.
Okay, so now they want to spend $3 million for a navigation center. And they're debating whether to give the money to the Goodwill Rescue Mission, the grant money.
Yep.
Like Leonard Modi said, well, that's not our money, Nick. That's California's money. Well, it's still taxpayer money, isn't it?
Yep.
So the Goodwill Rescue Mission, homeless magnate, has building an escrow behind it. And the city of Redding is trying to decide whether they want to take over that rescue or take over that escrow and own the building or give the homeless magnate the $3 million to develop it so they can put all the services for homeless people in one spot. And it'll be down there where most of their services are. I can see why they would want to do that, but they can't decide whether they want to own it or let the rescue mission own it. And now they're going to shop around with a one-mile radius and see if there isn't another building. And they just couldn't make up their mind. A one-stop day resource center or one that isn't all open all the time for them. And they want to spend $3 million for that. And I don't know so much about that. They're searching for new buildings. And beep, 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 what are you doing? And then they put a pause on this, and they didn't say how much money they wanted to use on this, to either rent more rooms or buy a motel.
Oh, that's going so well in San Francisco.
Oh, but the thing is, if they buy a motel, they're probably opening themselves up for liability, so maybe they'll buy a motel for somebody else. Hint, hint. What is it? No Boundaries.
Oh.
And just like the Home Key Project, where they bought, I think, five homes and a nonprofit owns them.
Yeah.
And
Project Home Key.
Yes, yes. And I'll bet that hotel isn't going to be down close to downtown Redding or Turtle Bay. Why don't they go into the Knights Inn down there at Turtle Bay? So this is getting – so I suggested – no, I didn't suggest any. They didn't want to listen to me anymore. Sometimes I don't think I'm welcome there. Oh, and they can't decide whether they want to hire one person for housing case management. I think they do. And this person, his job is to her job is to go around and find housing for these people that can't hold a job or can't carry a job. Listen, we're going to have to really shoot through it because we're coming up to a break pretty quick. Right after the break, I'm going to play three clips, one right after another, and talk briefly about the recall. And then we're going to go to Mike DeQuisto's I've got clips from his show with Carl Bott. And why don't we go ahead and play the first clip now and tail that right on into the break, Christina.
So the Surplus Land Act, the gist of the Surplus Land Act is the state saying one of the tools in our tool chest to get more housing is to require cities and government agencies that have surplus land to offer it to a group of housing consortiums to see if they want to use it to build housing for low income or whatever the housing, subsidized housing is.
Right.
So that's the purpose behind it. But then the question becomes, well, what is surplus land? I use a common sense definition and say surplus land is the vacant lot on the corner that, you know, it's nobody's using it. There's nothing built on it, or it had a building and it was torn down. It's not being used for anything. It's surplus. The rodeo grounds is not surplus. It's being used. It's been used for a long time. So the convention center is not surplus either. But under the law, and this is one of the strange parts, the city council can make a finding that the land is surplus even if it's not vacant.
Sharp pencil.
Which boggles the mind. You know, how can you go and do that? But the city.
So there you have it. He wants to take the Surplus Land Act, give away our civic center that's only half wore out, and boy, Julie Winter sure turned her nose up to the posse grounds. Oh, I walk through there and I see millions of dollars of improvements that want to go there. It's going to be interesting. Are we heading for a break? Break anytime you want, little sis. So,
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Join us this year for the 19th annual Cascade Christmas, a song and dance extravaganza. Redding's favorite holiday tradition is here. We travel back in time to discover how Santa and Mrs. Claus came to be. Along this journey through time and space, you will see some of your favorite Christmas characters and meet some new faces. We learn the magic of believing both in the spirit of the holidays and in ourselves. Tickets are on sale now, CascadeTheater.org, or by calling 530-243-8877.
For as long as anyone can remember, Historic Haas Farms has been the place for the holiday season. Memories that date back to early childhood, filled with wonderful food, music, and friendship. A place where everyone is welcome. In that tradition, Historic Haas Farms has a special treat, Lights on the Farm. A one-mile journey filled with wondrous lights and music. A country odyssey. To make this journey, you'll ride out in country-covered wagons or take the mighty Haas Express. Sit back and view the seemingly never-ending waves of shimmering lights. Brightly designed by one of our own, award-winning Michelle Van Gant of Redding Lights. So reserve your ticket to ride today. Times and dates are limited, and every Thursday, children 12 and under are free. So don't delay. Order your tickets online at historichaasfarms.com because Christmas lights do more than just glow. They're about love given a long time ago.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Address us on this issue, please get in queue.
All right. I've been in a Shasta County resident since I was about 5 years old. I'm 34 now, and I can point at a building and tell you what it was 10 businesses ago. I have watched this county, grown up in this county, and my biggest question is, what are you doing, Patrick Jones? Look at your behavior since you've become a politician, the things you've done. You got rid of Leonard Modi so that you could get other people installed to help push your agenda. During COVID, you came in here and you took down all the plexiglass in a huge grandstanding display, literally made your fellow coworkers and the public unsafe. You continuously do things to hurt the people of this county. You tried to pass a 2A resolution law while you profit from a gun shop. How is that not a huge conflict of interest? It is my belief that You literally want to watch this county burn. I don't believe you care about this public. I don't believe you care about these people. I believe what's happening right now is exactly what you want. From your little puppet master, Reverge Anselmo, who has had a grudge over this county for so long and paid you over $100,000 to do his dirty work. And you're doing it. We're trying to get rid of Kevin Cry to give you less power. That's why we're trying to do that. Chris Kellstrom needs to go, too. You know what? We can't get rid of you because you have brainwashed your District 4 constituents so well that there's no way we can get rid of you. So we're...
Next clip. We're going right to the next clip. This is Kevin Cry. That was Nathan Blaze, one of the leaders of the recall, and the ridiculous reason why they want to recall Kevin, because they can't recall Patrick.
Yeah.
So let's hear the real Kevin Cry.
My name is Kevin Cry, and I started the California Adventure Camps in 2021. Kids missed out on 2 or 3 years of experiences, and they're behind socially, emotionally. Kids are behind, and we have to get them caught up. Education has been tasked to do more in the off-school hours when school's not in, because right now kids need those experiences more than ever. One of the things I hope to do is work with school leaders and help them curate the events that matter most to kids and communities. I've done that for over 25 years with coaching, with running after-school programs, and I want to do that on a bigger scale. I have a brick-and-mortar ninja gym, very much like the show American Ninja Warrior, but we also have a travel course that we travel around all over the state and even the country, and I also have a talent agency. So what we found was putting all three of these together under one name, California Adventure Camps, serves that purpose and fills that gap. California Adventure Camps are opportunities for kids connecting with world-renowned athletes or speakers, songwriters. We're bringing a different type of education to the school experience that has never been done before.
Earlier in the school year, had been in conversations with the Ninja Coalition to give our students the opportunity to experience something a little bit different, a little bit beyond what the normal physical education classes can offer. The staff were professional, the kids were engaged, they had great speakers, great content that related to overcoming challenges. So it was really a treat to see all of our students participate.
I am Chef Pam Buono, and we taught them how to make fettuccine Alfredo from scratch. They learned how to make pasta dough, they cut the noodles, they rolled out the sheets, they made a salad. I would love to see programs like this to keep kids in the kitchen. Start with whole ingredients and it'll raise healthier kids.
This is just such a great opportunity for kids to experience things they've never got to experience before. It's just a great time for kids to get together and we learn social skills and we just try these new things that a lot of us have never done before. And the magic show was a blast. We had Magic Lessons by John Michael Hinton.
Kind of a warm-up practice.
Not only do we learn magic tricks to show our family and friends, but we also learn public speaking skills, and so it boosts their confidence and learn how to speak in front of other people.
I love giving these kids, whether they're in kindergarten through eighth grade, building blocks to be able to do any sort of public speaking in the future, whether that's performing on a stage or just going in for a job interview.
The feedback we're getting from teachers, parents, and then administrators is it's changing the culture of their school. It's changing the culture within a classroom. But most importantly, it's about changing the trajectory of a young kid's life. We start with just two school districts. By the end of July, we'll have been in 40 school districts. I'm looking forward to working with more and more districts across the country to bring the best years of education to these kids. At the end of the day, it's about every single individual kid finding something they're passionate about, something they love, something that makes them excited about being at school and learning. And for me, it feels good to be able to serve in the capacity that I am today. That's the best feeling, to know that you're doing something that's making a difference in that kid's life.
How could you not like Kevin Cry?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I didn't know about all the stuff that's going on there. And I know that one of the liberal recall voters was complaining about him taking government money to run that program.
That he was running before he ever became a supervisor.
I know.
He's calling a conflict of interest.
Yeah. No, it's funny. That's a conflict of interest, but Pelosi and her husband having a no-sealed bid listing for all the post offices is not conflict of interest. So,
are you supposed to quit your line of work when you become a supervisor?
That wasn't the intention of the Constitution. Constitution was to be working, land-owning people. That was literally the original Constitution. We're supposed to be the ones in government because they had a vested stake in the outcome of their decisions. And so you're not. You know, it's like our great friend Nathan, you know, he lambasted Patrick Jones about the Second Amendment thing that he pushed through because he owns a gun shop. Yeah, Second Amendment's a Constitution guaranteed thing, and he owns a gun shop. Get over it. Big deal.
You know, we're going to do one more clip from Nathan. And the reason I played this clip is because he has flipped around and tried to claim that all the liberals over there that are running the recall are Republicans and voted for Trump. So let's play that clip.
In here. This is not just the vile left Democrats coming here to attack you. The majority of the people that are going to be going against you tonight are Republican voters. So you have now upset a huge amount of people in this town, an amount of people so big that it's not just one side going against you anymore. What I would call that is you being a failed politician. You are a failed politician. You have failed at your job, and all of these people who are not vile left Democrats, who probably also voted for Trump and believe in a lot of the things you believe in, are going to come up here and tell you what a bad job you're doing.
So, there you go.
Thank you, Nathan.
And to get back at you, Patrick, because you're a failed politician, we're going to recall Kevin Cry.
There you go. Chris Kellstrom's voters, of which I am one, we're so brainwashed by Chris Kellstrom that we didn't know who we were voting for. So Nathan has got some very valid points of view. I got to be honest. This scares me. So.
Well, I can see where you can get dizzy with Chris, because when I look up for a length of time, I start getting dizzy. And that might be what happened, because Chris is 6'9".
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to Mike DeQuisto here, and he's going to tell you about the riverfront plan. And so let's. Are you ready with that clip there, Christina?
She's got a finger in the air, and it's only the pointing one. It's not the middle one, so we're okay. Sometimes you have to clarify what we get in here. She's looking.
We're going to run through these.
She's taking in everybody's comments and thoughts and all that, and saying this is what we want, a riverfront, which goes from, to Sheridan all the way up to Kutcher's Land.
Basically, includes Kutcher's Land, too.
It includes Kutcher's Land, but...
That's a whole separate
issue. That's a separate issue. I mean, he can build anything he wants there as long as he meets the requirements.
He doesn't need to be part of that plan.
No, he doesn't need to be that. But then it could be any bit. We have no idea what it looks like.
No, we don't. And I'm not sure how they're going to come to a consensus on what to do with the rodeo grounds, because there's people that want to basically build a whole new rodeo convention center. And if, let's say you want to go down that road and you want to do that, logistically, how are you going to do it? You probably can't. First of all, you got to get funding, and who knows if there's funding for anything like that. Second of all,
yeah, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Sure.
Second of all, there's going to be a time where the rodeo is going to have to be displaced while they're doing the construction to build whatever arena they want. Well, where do they go? And if they're displaced, how do you know when they get back they're going to have the same kind of deal that they had before? I mean, I look at it and say it's part of a It's wrong to say it's a conspiracy, but I think it's part of a long-term plan by McConnell and the related people to ultimately take it over. And I think ultimately they're going to take over Kutcher's property as well.
Eminent domain.
I think that's the biggest issue. I ran on that. I still think it's the biggest issue that faces the community. There is nothing wrong with the Civic Center or the rodeo grounds or Turtle Bay or any of that property down there that where it needs to be hugely fixed and changed and do anything. You can do it without doing this riverfront plan. The only reason the plan got approved, the only reason, is at the meeting where there was a vote to declare it surplus and sell it to the McConnell group.
Convenient.
Two people on the council, Kristen Schrader and Julie Winter, were adamantly in favor of selling it. And incidentally, Tanessa Audette spoke as a member of the public, adamantly in favor of selling it and developing it. Mark Mazzano and I were against it. Erin Reznor was the swing vote, and she was running for supervisor. So she, I haven't talked to her specifically, but she didn't really want to take a position. So she said, well, why don't we take some of the money we've got from the federal government and do our own plan, which kicks the can down the road. It doesn't approve a sale, but does it not approve a sale? You can come back later and try and do that.
So there you go. A little bit later in that clip, he pointed out that Erin Reznor's cost us $1.5 million. I think it was the ARPA fund.
Yep.
That just so she wouldn't look bad when it came to running for supervisor.
Wow, it's weird how a politician uses taxpayer money to not look bad. That's amazing. Whereas Kevin Cry, along with Chris Kellstrom and Patrick Jones, voted to save us money and get us out of those bad Dominion and put a deal together with the casino. They get lambasted for actually saving money or bringing money in, and Erin Reznor gets held as a hero to the liberals because she spent money to make it look good. Very impressive.
So, you know,
what do you got, Nick?
Well, we've got two more clips. This one clip's kind of a short clip, and it explains what a charter city is, and that's what Patrick Jones wanted to do when he was there and tried
charter
to make,
county. Charter county.
No, this is charter city.
Oh, charter
There's
city.
There's two differences.
Okay.
So if we can go with that third clip right now, that'd be great.
Offices and get a couple of days off and all that. Our guest is Mayor Mike DeQuisto, and Mark Mazzano is slated, because he's got vice mayor.
Correct.
To be the next mayor.
So let me start with, just for people that don't know how it works. There's two kinds of cities. There's a city that are called charter cities, where the mayor is elected and actually runs the city, sort of like a city manager.
I kind of like that.
But there's not too many of them, but there are some.
Yeah.
And then there's what they call general law cities, and Reading is a general law city, where the council members are all elected and the mayor is a rotating position decided upon by the council members, usually for a year at a time.
And what the what would you say is the mayor's main duty? I mean, what is the biggest power this mayor has?
I get to run the meetings.
Okay, run the meetings, but don't aren't you the one that puts things on the agenda, though?
Yeah, so that what we've got, what we've had for the last probably 6 or 8 years, we've had Barry Tippin, who just as well be the mayor.
Yeah.
And then you've got Kristen Schrader, Aaron Reisner, Julie Winter. Now you've got Tanessa Audette, and you've got Jack Munns. And they're all in the same group wanting to turn us into Bend, Oregon.
Yeah.
And whether we want it or not, and they can't control, they don't attempt to control the homeless. But one thing about electing a mayor, it's a 4-year term, and if you elect a dud, you're stuck with it.
Yep.
So it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. I think what we need to do really is be more particular about who we make our city manager. In fact, there's some kind of a presentation to Barry Tippin this next city council meeting, and I wonder if he's retiring and who they've picked to take his place.
Well, don't forget, before Barry Tippin, we had Emperor Mike Warren, who managed to put his name on plaques all over the place, including the Sundial Bridge, with probably some of the worst finish work in the world.
Kurt Starman was in between them.
Yep.
I hate to cut you off, but
I've
got something else to talk about. But let's finish this last clip. And this is going to happen, I think it's the 5th, Tuesday night at the city council meeting, the first Tuesday in December. They're going to pick a new mayor. So let's hear that last clip.
Ceremonial and than it is functional with more power.
Okay.
But people think when you're the mayor that, you know.
You're the mayor.
You're the mayor. So
that's
you,
right.
You get more correspondence. You get more emails 32. And messages. You get invitations for all kinds of ribbon cuttings and ceremonies and events and from all kinds of people everywhere. So, and it's something that people want to do and should do as part of the rotation of being on council. It's one of the duties that you should do. And so that's why we have three positions. We have mayor. We have vice mayor, and we have mayor pro tem. And that's the order in which you go. So this year, I'm the mayor. Mark Mazzano is the vice mayor, and Tanessa Audette is the mayor pro tem.
Okay.
The next meeting, the first meeting in December, the first item I'm going to go do after a presentation to Barry DeWalt is preside over who's going to be the next mayor. So one of the council members will make a motion for who's going to be mayor, who's going to be vice mayor, and who's going to be mayor pro tem. It should be Mark Mazzano because he's the vice mayor. That would be the normal progression. That would be the right thing to go do. He's earned it. And it'll be his, well, depending on where he goes in the assembly district run, it may or may not be his last year. But if he makes it past the primary and he's in the final, then he's not going to run for city council again. He's going to run for the assembly or do nothing. The other choice, I believe, and I haven't talked to her about it, is that some people may want Ms. Audette to be mayor.
Maybe the three Bethelites.
She's also running for assembly district.
Right.
I think that's a mistake for a number of reasons. The first reason is that she's not the vice mayor. She's only been on the council for a year. And despite what she says, you can't convince me that she just woke up one day a few months ago and decided to run for assembly district. So I think she's an opportunist. And she's not really interested in the city's. She works hard, and she is interested now for what she's doing, but she's also campaigning. And if she gets the assembly, district seat, there's going to have to be potentially an election, which will cost the taxpayers money to fill her seat because she's got 3 years left. So she would leave early, or the council could appoint somebody. So you know that's an open question. Uh-huh. Yeah, they could appoint you, Carl. You'd be you couldn't do your radio show probably. So it's just an issue. So if anybody wants to come out and voice their opinion as to who they think should be the mayor, they're welcome to come to the next meeting, the first Tuesday in December.
So you're saying there's a chance that somebody's going to bring up somebody else's name?
That's exactly what happened to Mike DeQuisto. The three girls ganged up, and I understand dishonest with Mark Mazzano when it was Mike's turn to be mayor, and they kicked the vice mayor, Mike, out of the picture and put Kristen Schrader in.
Yep.
So she could finish her homeless stuff, and she's on some damn panel now, continuum of care or something. She snuck around and got herself in charge of that so she can manipulate and bring all the homeless to Reading that she possibly can. But the thing is, we've got three Bethelites on there. Tanessa Audette is one of them, And what the thing is if you're running for an office and it says underneath current mayor Redding, that might garner you a few extra votes.
Maybe.
Well, and you know what's amazing, Nick, and I'm just perplexed. I'm dumbfounded, and I'm already dumb, so founded is another story.
I found that out.
I know you did. And why you put me on the show? I have no idea. But we live in a theoretical, I guess, provable 66%, quote-unquote, Republican-conservative area, and yet our city council and our board of supervisors are darn near liberal-leaning, I mean, until recently with the three that we got. How is that happening that a 2-to-1 advantage is getting undermined? I mean, I don't understand that. That kind of boggles my mind. When you have an open shot on goal, how do you lose that?
Well, they just claim they're Republicans, and everybody believes them, I guess.
Well, I've been to the Republican dinner a couple times through invites, and the people I've seen there are not Republicans. They're rhinos.
And then you've got that gal that's running for, what is it, Timmy Garman's district, Susan. She claimed that it's a nonpartisan board.
Oh, nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan.
I'm sure Nathan and the recall folks would agree that it's a nonpartisan form, considering the clip we just heard from Nathan where he basically said that the people running the recall were all Republicans, which I kind of have to laugh at.
I've got to correct myself. I thought it was Barry Tippin that was getting some kind of a presentation. It's Barry DeWalt, the city
lawyer.
Attorney.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's retiring, or maybe he's just maybe he did something right and they want to recognize him for it.
Well, you know, that's the great thing about public service is the way that CalPERS has now been worked out is they will completely stack up 3 years and then retire with, I think it's 80 or 90% of their last thing. So there seems to be a rotation at the top of departments where the people stay there to get to their max what they're going to earn, qualify for the pension, and they retire. I mean, I would love to be able to retire at 50 years old.
Schools have been doing the same thing.
Oh, I know.
I call it musical principles.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in school, we had the same principal for, you know, 15,
20
years.
Oh, my entire years, yeah.
Now you got a new one every other year.
Well, and now it's about the promotion up into the administration. So, so DeWalt might be getting a retirement if he's going to get some kind of an award, because I'm not aware of any great, stellar legal things that have happened, and he, on his watch, let that whole land purchase go with Red Emerson. So I'm not sure that he deserves an award, but we'll see.
Chuck Auckland retired. I liked Chuck. I would call Chuck or email him with problems. A pothole, it'd be fixed the next day. He finally got the flooding down at my house under control, which Julie Winter just stuck her nose up at me, and Brian Crane. Well, there was an agreement that was made years ago, but he sure couldn't produce it in writing.
Well, and the thing is, you're a really weird guy and in a weird spot. For people that don't know, Nick lives in like kind of the southwestern Reading area. And where Nick lives, on one side of the street is city, but in the middle of the city, there's this little county
island.
I mean, literally, it's the funniest thing as a real estate agent when you have to show property down there. You go, that's the city of Reading, sewer, REU. That's the county, PG&E, and no sewer. And so Nick lives in a very weird spot to begin with. So I can see them having little fights over who's giving you services, sir.
Well, when it's created on the city of Reading's property and it's 100% the city of Reading's responsibility to deliver the water down to the river and they let the canal break and pour into the county, you know, it's like taking a garbage truck and dumping it over in the county and saying it's your problem now.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was, right? You know, I skipped over this. I got this in the mail. And the recall, they're having a special meeting, 5:30, Wednesday, November 29th. Be sure and come. PISA will be provided. This letter I've got here, it says three times PISA will be provided. So I guess low-hanging fruit, they're trying to attract more with free PISA.
If you're a homeless person, there's free pizza Wednesday night at this meeting.
Well, it says everybody, free supplies for everybody, pizza and supplies for everyone. I think they want everyone to come. So if you're not busy Wednesday night, it's at the Reading Library in the community room. Go down and see what they're up to. They want you to register first, and I don't have an email address, but I do have two phone numbers.
Oh.
530-276 3371 and 530-945-4468. I have no idea who those belong to, but they want you to call and let them know you're coming so they have enough pizza.
I think this is another liberal supported outreach for homeless people. I think we should invite all the homeless people there. It's at the library, so they're already there to begin with. So let's get the homeless people to go to this meeting. Wouldn't that be great?
Hey, they can give them all address in District 1 and sign them up to register to vote.
Oh, I like it. See, you're thinking again, Nick. That scares me.
Well, and pizza will be provided. Three times they mentioned free pizza on there.
Well,
it just amazes me.
Well,
I hope they have a good turnout. You know, if you're against the recall, it might be wise to go see what kind of excuses they're coming up with. Being that the fact of the matter is, canceling the Dominion machines did not cost us money. It saved us $200,000 a year. And that was the reason they wanted to recall him, besides the fact that they can't recall Patrick Jones.
Well, the thing is if
so they should drop it.
Well, and the funny thing is when they had those tables and they were getting all those signatures, the people getting the signatures were just ignorant morons. They were just stupid. I went to one.
Low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit.
They like pizza, I'll wager.
Well, low-hanging fruit was the email that you originally got from the committee, and when I had a conversation with a lady on the air about low-hanging fruit being indicating that they're looking for the uneducated voters and people to help them who are not really aware, she tried to say it was a safety issue. But my point being, is I asked the people sitting there, nice older couple, and I asked them what was the recall about because they didn't know who I was. And they started spouting stuff off, and I just said, that's not true. Kathy Darling herself said at most it might be $1.6 million, not $4 to $5 million like you guys are quoting. And I said, you know, and don't you guys – I asked the lady in specifics. I said, don't you have – do you know who George Soros is? Oh, he's a very evil man. I said – doesn't it bug you that our registrar did a paid gig as a presenter at his event where he was underwriting the event? So our registrar went to a George Soros-sponsored event. Doesn't that bug you? They couldn't chew on their tongues fast enough and stop talking to me. So that's the thing. They don't know what they're talking about, but, boy, they sure convinced a lot of people to sign up.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because – I believe Kevin Cry is one of the best supervisors we've had in a long time.
Well, I'm actually...
There's a big blow-up about the Zog fire again. He requested some material, written correspondence and that kind of stuff concerning the Zog fire...
the settlement.
Settlement, and he sent it to our attorney. I forget her name. And anyway, she didn't feel like she should spend the time looking at that without the full board's consent, so they had a special meeting Monday. The board voted for it to go ahead and get that material for him because it's our material anyway.
Yeah.
And she requested the meeting, and a news cafe eight times in their story said that Kevin Cry requested this meeting that costs us a lot of money. And it didn't cost us any money because the two people that were there were already on salary.
Well,
it's just amazing how they flip things around and try and say he cost us money when, in fact, it didn't cost us any money. All he wants is the correspondence that he's entitled to, the contracts and everything, to see if there was some malfeasance, I suspect.
Well, I think there was definitely malfeasance because the lawyer who was overseeing the quote-unquote prosecution, as per the findings, the judge said that there was no evidence that this tree that caused the fire was a problem when, in fact, there were years of evidence. And as soon as it was settled, that prosecutor got rewarded with a judgeship locally. Quid pro quo. Quid pro quo. I think there's a lot of smoke in that fire, and I think Kevin's on to something.
Well, yes, and if nothing becomes of it, at least he made us aware of it.
Well,
without him, we wouldn't know where that $50 million went, that only $200,000 went to the Zog fire people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was to rebuild the playground at the school, and all the rest of it went to different entities, the police, the fire department, the Legacy Center, this and that?
A homeless, an animal shelter in Bella Vista who didn't have anything to do with the Zogmire because Stephanie Bridges is on the board out there. I mean, I think Kevin's on to something. He might overturn a rock and find the cockroaches scurrying.
If nothing else, he has us looking at the business that's being done in our county.
Yep. By our employees. Let's not forget, they work for us. That's the thing that we've now become such a browbeaten nation. We think that the government and the politicians are above us. They're not. They work for us. And we need to take that mentality back that we elect them to work for us. We pay these people to work for us. They are supposed to be accountable to us, not the other way around. And so I think Kevin's on to something.
They tell us what we're going to do, whether we like it or not, and sometimes there's consequences if we don't go along with them.
Yeah, well, they've got the power of God and the government on their side.
I just figured out why they want low-hanging fruit, because they'll probably trip and they won't get hurt so bad and sued.
There's a Nickism for you.
There's probably a height limit if you're going to be in a recall.